Welcome to The After Party, the weekly follow-up to sermons from Harbor of Hope Christian Church in Chelmsford, Massachusetts. We sit down every Sunday with the pastor who spoke and dive deeper into the topic from each week. Without further ado, join the party. Welcome back to another week of The After Party. I am Jeff, and I am here with Amy Chaney.
Hey.
Who gave one sermon this week on our snowy, snowy Sunday about conflict in the series Fightin' Words. And Amy, what was your message about this week? Would you mind sharing a little bit?
Sure. The message this week was all about wonder and worship and ultimately how we might approach conflict as an opportunity to be worshipful, which isn't exactly what we immediately go to in our minds when we think about conflict. We think of conflict as sort of the opposite of worship, but worship is not just an expression of the love that we have for God. That is part of it. It's about half of it, I'd say, but worship is also an opportunity for us to open ourselves up to be formed by the Holy Spirit. And I believe that we can find opportunities to do that in conflict as well. When we look at the people that we disagree with and we sort of declare God's magnificent creativity over them, you know, and say, wow, like God is creative that he would create someone who's so different than I am. But then also open ourselves up to being formed by the Holy Spirit by how that conflict plays out. There's a lot in there. There's a lot to unpack in that. And we kind of scratched the surface this week. But I talked about the resurrection as the biggest conflict that humanity has ever faced is our sin and what that has done in our life. And we spent generations trying to piece together a solution to that by making laws and sacrificing animals and kind of wrestling with this like broken relationship with our Creator. And then Jesus comes and looks like he dies and then doesn't, and doesn't just make things right with God. He makes things brand new. And that's something we never expected. So living with an openness to what God might be doing through other people is essential.
Beautiful. Yeah. And I think you're right. It did scratch the surface. And I think it was probably theology of conflict 101 in the best, in the best of ways. And I think we can get into that. But before we get too deep into it, you talked a lot about wonder, and you kind of talked about it in this way that shaped wonder as a combination of curiosity and awe. Mm-hmm. And something that came to my mind was just times that I've experienced wonder in that way. In particular, I was in Colorado for a summer, and I took a few trips actually out to the Black Canyon in Montrose, Colorado. And there's this one spot where you get to sit at the end of the canyon and looking straight down it, and it is just a pure vision of God's creation. And you talked about canyons as well, but you sit there and you just stand in awe of what it is, of this huge earth and this huge canyon, and you can't help but be floored by it. So you talked about going to Florence and seeing the Duomo, I believe it was, this large, huge church building that just inspired awe. Are there any other places in this world that you fall into wonder?
Gosh, yes. Not just man-made wonder either. I mean, I love visiting old churches and cathedrals like that for the sheer, I'm like just totally floored by the number of lives that were dedicated to constructing these buildings like Notre Dame and the Vatican and the Duomo in Florence and all kinds of these old European churches, because these people dedicated their lives and their labor to building this and never saw it finished. And I think that's beautiful as a metaphor as well. But I experience wonder like driving to work and seeing a particularly beautiful sunrise too. I don't think that you have to travel very far to experience God's wonder. The tiny little baby toes are like a moment of sheer awe and wonder. That whole process actually is incredible. I hope that everybody has moments and places in their day that maybe don't even require them to travel very far to experience just how incredible God is on both like a big macro scale and a tiny little scale. Like, yeah, it's amazing right. how big God is and also how small.
Right. And the bigness of God in the small things.
Exactly.
And speaking of counting baby toes, there's a lot of wonder in children, in mm-hmm. babies, where they are just unbridled wonder, that they are experiencing the world and everything is new and everything is incredible.
Yeah.
Which I think just shows what wonder really is. It is a separation of self and recognizing that there is bigger, better, more beautiful and more powerful things out there beyond ourselves that are in control, which I think is such a beautiful picture and kind of how you start to paint how we should shape our perspective going into conflict.
Yeah. I mean, when I think about my kids, and they kind of have multiple firsts, like they don't remember anything of their first couple years of life for long term anyway. And so like something like Christmas and like turning on Christmas lights, you know, like you think it's their first Christmas and then you get to have another first Christmas the next year because they don't remember it from last year necessarily. And just the gasp and the like wide eyes and just sort of, wow, I didn't even know that this was possible. I couldn't have even imagined this is pretty cool. Because not only are kids curious because they're discovering everything for the first time, but their experience of the world is so limited because their life has been so short that they can't even imagine things that they're encountering for the first time. Like, are plenty of things I could imagine. I can imagine what it might feel like at the top of Mount Everest because I have climbed much shorter mountains. I could imagine how awe-provoking. Of course, it'd be better once I got there if I survived.
Yeah.
But I can sort of like spoil it for myself and my imagination in the way that a child can't. And I think that sort of pure curiosity is something to cling to and just like expect to be surprised.
Sure. Right. This separation of self, this recognition that there's bigger stuff out there.
Yeah.
So we're talking about this wonder and this conflict in when we interact with people who are different from us, people who often rub us the wrong way. Have you ever been part of a team or a group that is different people with different perspectives that are working together, and were you able to see awe in them in that conflict?
Yeah, my favorite team I ever worked with actually was a relatively diverse in some ways and very much not diverse in other ways. But I think that when we can kind of romantically talk about building diverse teams, and that always sounds really great in theory, but in my experience, people kind of shy away from really embracing that for all that it could be like once you get started, because it's also very messy. Putting a bunch of people on a team to work together, even towards a common goal, who have not just different opinions, but different stories and experiences and backgrounds, means that their entire perception of the world is different than yours. And you have to sort of relearn, unlearn, and relearn a whole lot of things to work together. But my favorite team that I've ever worked on was a team of we call them division heads at my school where I work, where it's like department heads. So there is an English and world languages person and a history and Bible person and a science and math person and an arts person, which is what I was. and I loved this team because, like I said, we weren't diverse in every way, but we were diverse in our skills and specialties. Like, we had almost no shared interests. Very few shared skills, but we were united A, by a love for Jesus, and B, for just a commitment to creating and building a curriculum for our students that was going to help shape the way they see the world in a positive way. And we just, like, every puzzle that was sent our way, we just, like, schooled it. Not to use like a, okay, pun that intended. Pun was very intended, yeah. But because we could kind of pool together our skills and our interests, and also we had built up a trust in one another where we knew that we were all committed to the same things and that we had each other's back, and there was no like territory war. It was really nice. And we did not agree all the time. I still work with most of these people, and it's not that we agree on everything. It's that we're very comfortable disagreeing and kind of
great
fighting until we come up with fighting nicely. until we come up with what we think might be something that we had never imagined on our own, that we could only imagine when we combine our ideas.
Right. I love that picture because it's people with totally differing ideas and ideals that can come together. And I think what probably helped is that you could see Jesus in each other.
Yes.
And you were, and through that, you were able to see the value in the other's perspective.
Yeah, definitely. That was essential to the way that we functioned. And not every team on the planet obviously can benefit from that. But I'm assuming that if you're listening to this podcast, you're someone who's at least intrigued by Jesus, and you get to play that anchoring role on whatever team that you're on.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You can look at everybody on your team or teams and see Jesus in all of them and help everybody else who's maybe not intrigued by Jesus yet see it, even if it's in different language. You get to play that role, and it's pretty special.
Yeah, absolutely. And our tension, this is all of us, we want our perspective to be heard.
Mm.
We really want us to come out on top. But even if we are convinced we are right, we will not make any headway until we are able to hear the other person and let the other person know that we value their opinion as well.
Yeah.
So I think that effectively brings us to the point of tension and conflict that we can all kind of relate to, which is very present these days, and that is the political cycle.
Yeah,
if you don't mind diving into it.
We're in it all the time, it feels like. It feels like the next political cycle starts as soon as the last one concludes.
Yeah. And maybe even before we get into specifics, there's something about the political cycle, the two-party system that we are in America, if you're listening in mm-hmm. America, that is inescapable.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's this ongoing tension that doesn't seem to go away.
Mm-hmm.
What is your perspective on that, on the idea of that it's not something that can be solved?
Well, I don't know that it's a matter of something that cannot be solved. It's just not the kind of thing that will be solved quickly.
Mm-hmm.
And that was part of what I addressed in my sermon, is this idea of we call them wicked problems.
Yeah, right.
And that's actually not a term that I came up with for this sermon. That's like sociologists write about these two different types of problems or puzzles in life and in society, and they're tame problems and wicked problems. And tame problems are things like getting a man on the moon.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Like, that's difficult. It's complicated, but you know when you've achieved it. Like, when someone actually lands on the moon, you know that you've done what you set out to do.
Yes, the eagle has landed.
Exactly, yes. And
we did it.
And it takes years, maybe. Tame problems don't mean that they're easy. It just means that there is a really straightforward achievement of a solution. But wicked problems are problems that don't have that. They're something like the Cold War. Would be a wicked
right.
problem. Something like the Cold War, you don't really know precisely when it began or when it ended. Like, there's every constituent in that conflict mm-hmm. had a different idea of what the problem was or is. There are people who don't think that the Cold War ever ended.
Sure, right.
Other examples of this are like, if you go to any politician's website and look at their platform, the list of items that they have opinions about are all wicked problems.
Yeah,
and
certainly.
I'm not saying like, oh, there's no way to solve the immigration stuff. There is. It's just not something that can, like, we can't just slap,
sure,
you know,
right.
a single-sided thing on it. And I think we all know that. I don't think that that's a controversial thing to say. Certainly our experiences and our stories shape what we think the best next step is.
Yeah, right.
But most people agree that it's not just one step to be taken. It's
right.
It's a whole lot.
Yeah, and I think that's, in politics, the thing that I've seen the most often is we all have very similar goals.
Like, yeah.
We all want happiness and well-being for all people,
mm-hmm.
for the most part. There's some people with sinister values out there, but we all more or less want a healthy, functioning,
mm-hmm.
beneficial for all people system.
Mm-hmm.
But it's just the goals, or excuse me, it's just the mechanisms and the means to get there that we disagree on.
Right. And like you had mentioned, the bipartisan political system, which, to come full circle, I do think there's a way to make this system function better for us, or to help the system function as best as it's meant to. but that feels like a wicked problem. Like the things that the good and bad parts of this bipartisan system that we have is an example of something that whichever citizen you're talking to at any given moment will have a different opinion as to how it's functioning and how it should be better and how it'll help them more. So it's just a word to use. It doesn't mean that they're bad. Wicked doesn't mean evil. Wicked just means complicated and multifaceted.
Great. And so in light of that, as we enter into this election season that's picking up speed very quickly, how do we see wonder in the people who disagree with us?
We make ourselves. I think we have to. I think it is the most profound way today, right now, that we as people who love Jesus can share hope with the world. Mm-hmm. Because I think that politics make people very nervous.
Certainly.
They make people very angry and scared.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, because it's politics boil down to a bunch of people who are not intimately involved in your own life, making decisions that intimately impact your own life.
Right.
And when these feelings like anxiety and fear and anger and those disappointment sometimes get wrapped up in things like that, it's really easy to lose our awe and wonder at God's creativity.
Yeah, right.
And I think that even when we're in a situation that feels like, you know, your story or your experience is not being fairly represented in that moment, next week we're actually going to talk about justice and like righteous anger and how this is Martin Luther King Day. We're recording this on Martin Luther King Jr. Day.
Sure.
Righteous anger and justice have their place, and we need that to kind of fuel change and fuel progress in our world and in our country. But I also think that as citizens having like normal conversations with the people around us regarding these things, our job needs to be sharing hope from within it and not exacerbating anger and fear. At least not first.
Right.
Hope first.
Yes.
Fear later.
Which is no easy task.
Yeah.
Especially, it's great. I think it's easy to think about it and to think about doing that well.
Yep.
But when you're around the dinner table with family who disagrees with you, it is so easy to get caught up in your own desires and your own opinion and your own desire to come out on top.
Yeah.
To see, and you miss that in other people.
Yeah.
You miss that wonder.
And I think we forget too, like when we're in the heat of a politically charged conversation with someone in our life who's not a politician, like a family member or a colleague or a friend, and when we get into a heated debate about a certain topic, I think that even as we're talking about it, we're kind of oversimplifying it and saying, you want to come out on top. Like it's all about winning. Sometimes,
right.
Sometimes though, it really is like a need. An impulse and a not just a desire, but like a need to be heard and a need to have your experience of the world be understood by someone else. Because there's this desperate feeling that if your very real experience of the world isn't captured or shared or expressed and heard in some way, that you might wind up on the wrong side of history or like in a space that you can't get out of on your own. And so that's where like fear and anxiety, they're very real. And I don't want to like oversimplify this and say, you know, slap a silver lining on every, you know, bill that gets put on the floor that you disagree with. Not at all. I just mean ask more questions and ask the people who disagree with you how they see the world and then see what that teaches you about how you might actually productively engage in a way that leads to good change.
Yeah.
That's complicated.
It's so
complicated.
Because it's not about being right. It's not about which side is right. It's about the awe and the wonder together.
Yeah.
Which is beautiful and hard and part of the process.
Yeah. Yeah.
My favorite part of your sermon was, which you tied in the whole way, but you talked at the beginning about seeing the Duomo and saying, wait, this is the ugly part.
Yeah.
It gets better. Which is such a beautiful picture of how we can view the world, this conflict, and even when things are most dire, to recognize that there is more to come. The best is yet to come. And if you don't mind, there's one historical instance that I thought of that I just learned about, actually. The guy that invented the process of weaponizing gas in World War I, I actually looked it up. It's Fritz Haber. I believe he created this process of synthesizing ammonia from nitrogen, and they use that to, you know, kill thousands of people in the war. And that is an awful, awful thing, and it's hard to see where that there is any good in that. But they actually ended up using that process. And you'll have to fact check me on this, but I'm pretty sure the same process that this guy used for creating chemical warfare is the same process that they used to get ammonia into soil to help feed millions of people through less than natural processes. And so he created something good that was initially intended for something bad.
Did he ever get to experience, did he know that that's what that process was used for? Or did he die
honestly,
before?
You will have to fact check on your own, because I don't know all the details, but I do know that he was connected with the same two processes. And so is that kind of what you're talking about? Like this wait, the good is coming? Like in this wonder and conflict?
Yes and no. I think that I want to be really careful not to say, hey, every, you know, massive political issue or issue of injustice that you're facing today has a silver lining. And so, like, smile through it and everything will be fine. That's not at all what I'm saying. What I am saying, though, is that sometimes that is a result. But there were thousands of people who gave their life to building that cathedral in Florence and never saw it finished. And I think that we experience that sometimes too, where it's Martin Luther King Day. There is plenty of his legacy he never got to experience. And it's our job to be these like forces in the middle of conflict that help create, and I'm going to throw out another smart pun, to create like fertile ground for for there to be progress oriented conversation. And the worst way to do that is to not stop and ask questions. And the best way to do that is to stop and ask questions. So like when we have representatives on the floor voting for a bill in our government, the best thing that they can do for each other is to challenge one another and ask questions. It's frustrating to us as the people to sit and wait and watch that, but they have to do that for each other. And I hope and I pray every single day that the way they do that, the way they ask questions and challenge one another, is with a heart of opening space and keeping space that's fertile for something to happen that they did not see coming. Like in a good way, in a resurrection kind of way. To have God provide the people and the circumstances for something to come out of it that actually neither side could have imagined on their own. And I think that is why we are diverse as a human race. I think that is why we all occupy the same space and have different stories and ideas. It's so that God can surprise us. And when we're not looking to be surprised by that, by him, I think we can get wrapped up in fear, and we can actually, we can erode the soil when we're wrapped up in fear and we're not expecting to be surprised by God or by other people working, like other people that God is working through. Then I think we kill our opportunity to be left in wonder and awe of what he's done with the situation. We miss the resurrection. Like, we doubt it. We don't accept it. And then we continue trying to fix the problem of our sin ourselves. And that's metaphoric. But I think we can apply it to any number of really wicked problems in our life today. And as people who love Jesus, I think the resurrection story calls for us to expect to be surprised and to have a posture of curiosity and wonder, and just expect that there is more that we don't know, because he proved that to us. And if we love him and follow him, we'll wear that, you know, for the rest of our life.
I love that.
Yeah.
Is there anything else that before we end that hit the cutting room floor that you want to share with our listeners?
Yeah, there's a book that I love by a woman that I hope listens to this podcast someday, because that would be like a serious like celebrity moment for me. Pastor Stephanie O'Brien. I follow her, Pastor Steph, on Instagram. You should all follow her and then tell her I told you so that she can be my friend.
Yes. We can get her on here one day.
But she's a pastor out in the Midwest, and she wrote this book called Stay Curious. And the kind of tagline of the book is, not all who wonder are lost. Mm. And like, we could stop there. That's just a great tagline for a book. The book is really about how questions and doubts can save your faith. And it's about questions and doubts regarding faith specifically. But I read this book and I can connect the way she talks about faith and questions and doubts to questions and doubts about the state of humanity and our country and just all kinds of things. And I think she's a strong woman and an incredible writer. And I wanted to read the very back of her book. I'm going to spoil the last few pages of her book, but that doesn't spoil the book at all, because this is simply an oath of curiosity. And it's, I think, more or less a benediction kind of her writing, like something that comes along at the end to sort of bless whatever comes next. And I didn't wind up reading it in the sermon, but I wanted to, and so I'll read it now. Is that okay?
Absolutely, please
do. All right. An oath of curiosity. You might understand or not understand some of these words. Just let them, like, hit your heart, and we can talk about it another time. All right, so an oath of curiosity. I swear to fulfill, to the best of my ability and judgment, this oath. I will be brave and courageous and choose curiosity over comfort. Where I'm tempted to wander, I will choose to follow wonder. Letting go of certainty, I will embrace the mystery of God. I will notice when I am being a skeptic and choose to be a seeker. I will assume God is bigger than my human mind can fully comprehend. I will go through the brick wall, brick by brick, and not ignore it. When I feel my heart and mind expanding, I will accept that, although it's painful, it is good. I will be honest about my doubts, even if it's hard to admit I have them. I will check my baggage for stowaways. I will slay my dragons of fear, grief, and anger as different seasons bring new dragons. I will reject dualistic thinking and the idea that there are only two forks in the road. In my relationships, I will seek to understand the nuance of different perspectives. I will encourage others to discover and embrace their questions. I will stay open to what I can learn from those who are different from me. And when I feel stuck, I will try experiments that help me keep moving. I will make friends with the tension. I will choose resilience over religion. I will only go through the motions if I am going through them on purpose. I will go beyond the shadow that doubt so easily casts. I will choose to live into the questions that really matter to me. I will choose passionate uncertainty. And I will choose to stay curious and thus become more fully alive.
Well, thank you for sharing.
Yeah.
Stay curious.
Go read that book, Steph O'Brien, Stay Curious.
Stay curious, everyone.
Maybe we can post a link in the notes or something.
Yeah, definitely. Man, I thought we'd be more giggly today. Wonder's like so happy and bright.
It's not, actually. Wonder reminds you how small you are. That's heavy. That's kind of heavy by definition, and that's okay.
Yeah.
Our world is a pretty heavy place, but we have a God that carries us through.
Yes. Amen.
Amen.
Stay curious.
We'll be giggly again. Next week we'll be angry.
Okay, either one. See you then.
Love you.
Thank you for joining the After Party. You can follow our sermon series online at harborofhope.org, and you can party with us again next week wherever you listen to your podcasts. If you're in the area, please visit us at Harbor of Hope Christian Church on Sundays at 9:30 or 11. Party on.